Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans, not just around the world, but here in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. If you're hearing my voice, it can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you are listening to the newest edition of F101. Let's get right into it. We are at the Mexican Grand Prix. We officially only have four more races to go until the end of the season. And it's turning into be one of those competitions, turning into one of those years where you have absolutely no idea what the fuck is going to happen for the rest of this season. Red Bull has officially fallen off the pedestal. The Giants have fallen. McLaren has taken over the number one constructors position in Formula One as of right now. They're barely holding on. Red Bull is because Ferrari is charging at them right now. The Austin Grand Prix, the Mexican Grand Prix, the newest addition to their upgraded car has been the most spectacular upgrade that Ferrari has put out in the last season and or two. It's working on all cylinders. It wasn't a massive upgrade, but it was a very, very important upgrade. Things work the way they're supposed to. People are taking their time. They're developing it correctly. Everyone is officially taking the same stance as McLaren did. Take your time. Do it right. Do it right the first time. As we head into this Mexican Grand Prix, Red Bull is barely holding on to the second place position. As I said, Red Bull is just carving up that track. But this race, the Mexican Grand Prix, is one of extraordinarily difficult because they don't use this race for, they don't use this track for anything else but Formula One. No F2 runs on it. There's no Porsche Super Series. There's no GP racing. It is strictly built for F1 weekend, and that is it. So what's that going to mean for the racers, and what's that going to mean for the team? It's pretty simple. Every single car, every single team has to put at least two replacement drivers out on the track, get them some experience, get them some feel of the brand new car, so on and so forth. So what do? You don't waste your driver's time. What you do is you put out the little F2 drivers. You let them go around the lap a lap for only 1 hour, get them the feel of the car, get that rubber in, make it all nice and easy for the actual boys when it comes time to race time. Qualifying, fantastic weather, blue skies, no wind. No clouds, no nothing. It was a perfect day. By the time these drivers actually get on there, the track will be a little bit more rubbered in. Corners 16 through 19, still a ton of difficulty, we'll call it. Difficulty for these drivers, mainly because they take that corner at such speed and at such a sharp turn. A lot of these guys are going off the track. A lot of track violations happening in Q1, Q2, and Q3. These guys just want to go as fast as they possibly can. But this track technically has the fastest straightaway of every single race on the grid. But at the same time, it's got the slowest corners on the grid or on the calendar this season. So it's very much a combination of you got to pay attention to what you're doing, what your car is feeling like, and you try your damnedest not to hit the wall. Well, Q1, 8 track violations. It was not a good day for these guys. Piastri, Perez, Cole, like all these guys, absolutely no pace this qualifying session. George Russell binned it in the first practice session, absolutely fucked up that car once again, second weekend in a row. He did it in Austin. He's doing it in Mexico. Is there a fundamental problem with the Mercedes for these last 6 races? The Mercedes seems to be doing quite well, mid speed to not low, but you're not quite going full out, but you're going about 3/4 speed to the slow corners. Mercedes does have a tendency to be a little bit more stable. But as soon as you get these Mercedes on a track like this, where you got to go from super fast to super slow to super fast again, there's absolutely no stability to the car itself. The curbs in Mexico are a little bit higher than anywhere else on the circuit this year. So especially for Mercedes, if you ride those curbs too much and your balance is not exactly there for the car, you're going to start to chop back and forth. You lose your grip, you lose your confidence in the car. The car is going to go where it wants to go, which is what happened full practice to Russell in Mexico, and it happened to him in Austin, Texas. thankfully for everybody, they were still riding the curbs in Mexico, but nobody decided to hit the wall, at least in Q1. It was just super hard to find the pace. Max Verstappen showing that he was picking up where he left off last weekend in Austin. Really good pace, not super fast, not blowing everybody out of the water, but he's doing what he needs to get done to get the spots that he needs in Q1, into Q2, and hopefully he gets that pole position in Q3. Meanwhile, Ferrari is still, they're on the hunt. They're super consistent. The handling is amazing. Are they the fastest track, or are they the fastest car on the track? No, I'm still saying McLaren, even through qualifying and through the race, which we'll talk about a little bit later, McLaren is still the faster car on the straightaways. Ferrari has just seemed to be able to put together an all-around better package. The drivers seem to be a little less stressed. They're having more fun, which means they're a little bit more in tune with the car. It's a little bit easier of an ebb and flow, more confidence, better points, better results for them, not only in qualifying, but in the race itself. So let's get into Q1. Not a whole lot, except for track violations, 8 of them. Not a whole lot of drama, which is very, very nice. Top five, we're going to go from 20th to 16th. Zhou Guanyu in 20th, Esteban Ocon in 19th. Checo Perez, one of the big names out in Q1. He's in 18th. Oscar Piastri in 17th. Kalle Pinto's out in 16th. Piastri and Perez, they just could not put a fast enough lap together. Now, they didn't have a whole lot of track violations for them. They didn't get any times deleted. They just could not put a super consistent lap together when they absolutely needed it. They put in some solid numbers. Unfortunately, so did everybody else. And everybody else's time just was that little bit better, which makes it super frustrating, especially for Checo Perez. He is still under the eye of scrutiny in Red Bull and just the world of F1, period. Yes, he's at his home track in Mexico. He absolutely needs to deliver this weekend, but it looks like he's not going to yet again. The early exit in Q1 just kind of fortifies the fact that Red Bull, they need to get rid of him. There's only 4 races left. Will they keep him to the end of the contract or to the end of the year? Probably give him the seat. Checo's still feeling a little bit of confidence going, hey, I still have a contract all the way up until the end of 2025. There's nothing you can do about that. Red Bull has a tendency of kind of working their ways around the contracts. Maybe you still have a Red Bull contract, but you're going to go drive for VCarb instead. Or they'll just buy him out. They'll take the hit financially, buy him out, bring in, I don't know, someone like Liam Lawson, who's absolutely destroying the junior and the rookie competition. He is, by far, in my eyes, the driver for next season to watch out for when he gets a seat. Everybody else is veterans at this point. They know what they're doing. Liam Lawson, better than Kalle Pinto, better than Berman that's coming in for Mercedes, I believe. Or no, Antonelli's coming in for Mercedes. Keep your eye on Liam Lawson. If he doesn't end up with the seat next season, I think it's a massive, massive miss for the majority of those F1 teams. But Checo Perez, man, he didn't hit the wall. He didn't do anything bad. He just could not put together that run that he absolutely needed to in Q1. Moving into Q2, it was pretty uneventful all the way up until the last minute 25 of the session. Yuki Tsunoda ends up binning it into the wall. You remember when I talked about the curbs and how high they are? Apparently, VCarb and Yuki Tsunoda, they didn't catch the memo on how high the curbs are or how much your car can rock back and forth once you almost hit that curb straight on. It's exactly what Yuki does. Takes a curb. All of a sudden, he's got no stability in the car. It's bouncing back and forth. By the time he does get grip, it is way too late. Locks up, goes into the barrier, doesn't demolish the car, but it is a red flag for the rest of the session. Not a really good way to start your qualifying in Q2. Yuki's starting to feel the pressure. I do believe that the only reason why he's in Formula One right now, especially with VCarb, is that his sponsor is Honda. Honda is leaving Red Bull at the end of 2025. He's only has one more year. The way he's been driving and his lack of maturity, for the lack of a better sense, and his lack of performance, especially since Liam Lawson has come in, has kind of solidified what Red Bull had thought at the beginning of the season. Anyways, he's not ready for the big team. He's not ready for the big time. He's not ready for the spotlights, and he's barely ready to drive in VCarb as it is. Liam Lawson's come in, 6 races to go, and he's just absolutely dominating Yuki Tsunoda. He's qualifying better. He's got a better race pace, in my opinion. He's got a better sense of racing in himself, better than Yuki Tsunoda. He deals with situations a lot better than Yuki does too. If anything, Liam Lawson would have more stress on him than Yuki Tsunoda would. I mean, Liam's got to prove to himself that, and to not only to himself, but to the higher ups, that he deserves a seat next season. Yuki, man, you just got to hang on. You just got to not overthink it, drive the way you know you should, and not bend the car. Well, you're not driving like you should. You're starting to be in your head now. He's starting to get a little aggressive driving and over the radio like we have seen in the past. He's starting to revert back to what he was before when he thought there was so much pressure on him. He's not driving like he should. He's not proving to be an asset to any team in Formula One, especially VCarp. They're going to dump him at the end of 2025. He knows this. Everybody knows this. The writing is on the wall. He needs to prove from here on out for the rest of this season and all of next year that he may not deserve to be in VCarb. They may not want him anymore, but he still deserves to be in Formula One, period. When all things all said and done, after he hits the wall, after the red flag is put out and the session is officially done, these are our bottom five. We're going to go from 15th to 11th. Valtteri Bottas in 15th, Lance Stroll in 14th, Fernando Alonso in 13th, Liam Lawson in 12th, Yuki Tsunoda in 11th. Now, all of what I just said seems to be kind of negated when you look at Yuki Tsunoda qualified higher than Liam Lawson. The only reason why Liam qualified in 12th and not 11th is because when they red flagged the session, it kills all fastest times. Liam was on a fast run. He was much faster than Yuki Tsunoda when this crash happened. That's how racing goes. You kind of got to get the fast laps in while you absolutely can. It's going to be very interesting to see how much repairs they have to do on the car before the race itself. Moving into Q3, it's time for the big boys. It is time for the top three teams to see who will be in the top three positions. A little bit different this time. There's only one Red Bull. Okay, that's not really different. That's kind of the usual as of right now. There's only one McLaren in the top 10. There's two Ferraris, two Mercedes, one Red Bull. We've got two Alpines are mixed in there. We've also got, and I haven't mentioned, see if you picked it up, we've got two Haas in the top 10. It's fantastic to see how Haas has been doing. Nico Hülkenberg is really, really, really setting the pace for the team, setting the standard of what you need to be able to do to get into Q3. Not only that, but to eventually score points in the actual race. Max Verstappen trying his damnedest to keep up with the McLaren and the Red Bull. At one point, down to the very last lap, he had his fastest lap deleted. So at one point, he went from first absolutely all the way down to the bottom last because his track time was deleted. He managed to scrape back a little bit of time. But again, those Ferraris, they're so fast. They are on a absolute mission. I say Ferrari is absolutely unstoppable for the rest of the season. No drama at all. Just really, really fast track times. No people obstructing anybody else. It was a really good Q3 to watch. It was the best of the best. This qualifying session. Let's get into your top 10. We're going to go from 10 to 1. Nico Hülkenberg is 10th. Alex Albon is 9th. Pierre Gasly is 8th. Kevin Magnussen is 7th. Lewis Hamilton is in 6th. George Russell in 5th. Both Mercedes still, the faster they go, the seems to be the slower the car wants to go. The more they push it, the more the car is pushing back. Mercedes, after the race and after qualifying, they still don't know what's going on with the cars. They don't know where they're losing their pace, where they're losing their speed. I mean, they're not in a horrible position in the constructor standings. Hamilton and Russell are not in a horrible position when it comes to the driver's standings either. They're kind of still stuck in no man's land. You would think by now that Mercedes would have been able to figure out where the car was going wrong and definitely where they needed to improve. Leclerc is in 4th, Norris is in 3rd, Max Verstappen going from a deleted lap time all the way up to 2nd place, which means the one and only Carlos Sainz ended up being on pole position, and not just by a little bit, he absolutely 3/100ths of a second, absolutely dominated Q3, he could put no step wrong. He could put no foot wrong. Same with Leclerc. Although he did qualify 4th, it was the best that his car absolutely could do on a one-lap round. Leclerc, not exactly the fastest or best driver when it comes to one-lap speed. He is definitely that quintessential long-distance type driver. You need to put him with multiple laps. You need to put him in traffic. And that's when you're really going to see Charles Leclerc come out at his absolute best. But still in the top 5. Fantastic. It sets up the Mexican Grand Prix for a very, very, very exciting start. Well, now the qualifying is done. All the drivers are in their places. The cars have been repaired. It is only time for one more thing. And that is officially the Mexican Grand Prix, round 20 of the 24 races in the 2024 season. We are talking 17 turns, 364.9 kilometers an hour, 4.3 kilometers distance, 71 mind-bending laps, and the fastest lap to date is a 1:17.7 done by Valtteri Bottas in 2021. All the cars replaced. We're ready to go. Esteban Ocon is starting in the pit lane. He took a little bit. He took a few power unit parts. So he will be starting in the pit lanes. Unfortunately for him, this is going to sound really mean, but it's not exactly a massive miss when it comes to Esteban Ocon not starting on the grid. Alpine, they need to get their shit figured out. They haven't had a very successful season at all. They've kind of hung in there, but they're not really making a whole lot of inroads. I mean, they're ninth in the Constructors' Championships. They're only 14 points ahead of Sauber. If Sauber ends up getting top five, any driver, they just automatically leapfrog Alpine. It's kind of embarrassing. So Esteban Ocon, power unit, more points, pit lane start. After that, it was a very jovial atmosphere. It's Checo Perez's home race. It is also Fernando Alonso's 400th Grand Prix. He officially sets the record as having the most Grand Prix starts in F1 history, as well as NASCAR history, IndyCar history. Like, he has the most races raced in the history of motorsport. Congratulations to Fernando Alonso. It was a hectic fucking start. Let me tell you. Red flag right off the dot. Didn't even make the first turn. As how Mexico usually goes. Yuki Tsunoda, DNF. It was a little bit of a cluster at that point as well. How do you go into this? Albon was off as well. Yuki Tsunoda was off as well. And it was the exact same. It's the exact same incident, but it was kind of like one of those cascading effects. Nico Hülkenberg. So picture the cars left, center, and right. Nico Hülkenberg is on your right. Then you've got Alex Albon. And then you've got Yuki Tsunoda. Okay, so we're going right to left. Nico Hülkenberg comes over a little bit to stay off the grass. So he's going from right to left just a little bit, and they are three cars wide. So when Nico Hülkenberg goes to the left, he doesn't spook Alex Albon, but Alex has got nowhere to go. He also has to go to the left, not realizing that Yuki Tsunoda is just bombing up that inside corner. And so then Alex Albon unintentionally goes into Yuki Tsunoda. Yuki ends up losing a tire. Albon ends up absolutely demolishing the car. Both of them are out before the first corner. Apparently for Yuki Tsunoda, this is like the third time it's happened to him in Mexico that he hasn't made the first corner. He's trying to make a joke out of it, yet it's setting a really bad precedent that, hey, you can't make the first corner a whole lot. It was not a good start for him. Red flag out immediately. It wasn't exactly a fast red flag either. It took them, I do believe, if my math is correct, it took them until lap six to get everything officially cleared out. Now, once all of this drama was taking place and the reviews were going over and all this and all that, all of a sudden it appears on the screen that Checo Perez has got a 5-second penalty. And we're like, well, he didn't do anything. He didn't run into anybody. He didn't cause a crash. What's the 5-second penalty for? A 5-second penalty for Checo Perez for a false start. Now, you can't really false start like you can in a race. You'd end up hitting the car ahead of you. What Checo Perez essentially did is that he didn't park properly in the right spot. So you see all those, that big white box, that's where the car is supposed to go. There is another yellow line that you see within that white box. That is the driver's reference of when they see that that line where the tires are, that's where the car is supposed to go. Well, Checo Perez, for whatever excuse he gave, was definitely probably a meter and a half outside of that box. He did a full stop. He had a really good start. I don't think it gave him an advantage at all, but because he didn't park in the exact right spot, he also got himself a 5-second penalty. The weekend just got worse and worse and worse for him. Checo does end up picking up some side pod damage. It didn't blow out the side pod, thankfully, this time. There has been instances in the past where Checo Perez will get some side pod damage, and just the downforce and the speed of that Red Bull car, it just rips the entire side panel off of the side pod. Not this time. It didn't help him. I mean, it didn't help his day at all. He ends up finishing, I believe, either last or second to last on his hometown race. It was pretty embarrassing for Checo today. Lap 9, clean start. I should get back to, you know, in order. Clean start for the restart, which is fantastic. It was a rolling start. They were able to clear the debris off the track plus both cars, so they didn't have to have a full, like, restart, which was nice. Clean start. Max really knew what he needed to do. He needed the bounce that he needed to get, which he got. Unfortunately for him, lap 9, so 3 laps later, Carlos Sainz officially passes him back into first place. I mean, Max had a fantastic start. He probably would have been able to keep the lead for the majority of the race just for how defensive his driving is and just for how the course is made. But because of the restart, because of kind of like the fresh tires all of a sudden, and everyone was back on pace and more on even ground, Carlos Sainz just ended up just absolutely blowing past him whatsoever. You also hear him say, Max itself, that he's got no battery charge. How is he supposed to defend? This is absolute shit. Sounded like he's got some, charging issues with his battery. Nothing else was brought up at all around the race about that. He just had one hell of a time trying to keep up. So once Carlos Sainz was back into first, he was where he needed to be. He never really looked back. Ferrari itself didn't really look back from probably the 9th or 10th lap on. Now, when I say 9th or 10th lap, I'll call it 13 laps. And there's a reason for this, and we're going to get into it right now. The battle that happened last week in Austin, it was Norris versus Max, and it was some very, very typical Max Verstappen type driving. And now what I mean by that is Max really, really, really loves to go really deep into the braking zone. And for that, every time Max decides to go into a corner against somebody else, he likes to take the inside corner. Now, he is going to brake at the very last possible second while still being able to make the corner. So, in this instance, especially in Austin, and it also happened this week in Mexico, Max is going to be on your left-hand side, so what we call the inside of the corner. And Norris is going to be on the right-hand side or the outside of the corner. The rules state that if you are a certain distance ahead, going into the final braking zone or the apex, that the car ahead owns the racing line and the corner. But what the gray area of the rules are, and this is where Max is really good at making sure those gray areas work for him, is that it doesn't necessarily mean that the car on the inside of the corner has to absolutely give the driver on the outside of the corner any space to drive at all. So essentially, if you're ahead at the apex and it is your racing line, you can just cut off the driver that's above you and just get that entire corner to yourself and run them off the line. Well, Max ended up doing that twice. Both times, in my opinion, absolutely 100% uncalled for. It was absolutely horseshit. It was Max taking his defending role a little bit too personally and a little bit too aggressively, especially on the second one. So we're going to go lap, I believe it was lap 12, 9 or 12, Max versus Norris. Same thing. Norris is going on the far side. Max is on the inside. He is a little bit ahead of the corner, so he is able to take this corner. He pushes Norris off the track. They do kind of get along. There is a little bit of bumping on there, a little bit of like actual physical wheel bumping. They're not driving in a straight line. They're trying to move each other over. So then a couple laps later, Max does this all over again, but he is not ahead in the second attempt. Okay, the second time they do this, he's not ahead. He just dives bomb. He brakes, or he accelerates 110 meters further than he normally does, and he brakes 60 meters later than he does. This absolutely shows not only desperation in this corner, it also shows that he has absolutely no intention on actually making the apex and getting to that turn. So what does he end up doing? He ends up running Lando Norris off the track again, both of them very, very, very far off the track. Max retains, and in air quotes, retains his driving position, even though he really shouldn't have, and he doesn't give the track back. He doesn't give that space back or the position back to Lando Norris. In this case, he absolutely should have. He should have given the place back to avoid a penalty. Well, the stewards come back and they look at both instances, and it's like, it just compounded. Like, you really shouldn't have done that. You don't need to do that. Max Verstappen's day kind of gets a lot worse. He's handed 20 seconds worth of penalties. One for forcing a driver off the track. Second for unnecessary wheel banging. Essentially, it's just one step below causing a collision. In my opinion, again, like I stated before, 100% he deserved this 20-second worth of penalties. When he was told about the first 10 and then the second 10, he didn't fight it at all. He's like, yeah, okay, that makes... It's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And he kind of just left it from there. He didn't fight it. He didn't try to argue it at all. He knew what he did, and he just accepted his fate. Now, 20 seconds in this race is an absolute eternity. He ends up taking his 20-second pit stop penalty. When he comes back out, he is 16th. Like, he is dead last pretty close. And all of a sudden, he just starts to climb and climb and climb and climb. You saw the fantastic racing ability that Max Verstappen does have. It's just when he gets in his own head, he gets super destructive, and it just destroys his entire race. There was absolutely no point and no reason for him to take these penalties. You lose a spot to Norris. Okay, you two are competing in the Drivers' Championships. Big fucking deal. You are one spot behind him. The difference in the points is 2 points. Now you take these 20 seconds worth of penalties. Now you've got to work your way all the way up the entire grid and hope that you catch up to him. By the time everything was all said and done, it was an 8-point difference. So for absolutely no reason whatsoever, he pissed away 4 points because of that. For absolutely no reason, because he's stubborn and because he made a very bad decision. He's paying for the consequences, but there was absolutely no reason for him to do this. On top of that, the FIA called him after the words. He went up to the steward's office. He ended up getting 4 points added to his driver's license, his supercar license. So just a small recap, if you don't know what the driver's license is in the points, each F1 driver has a supercar license. You are allowed to get up to 12 points before you're suspended for a race. Okay. Haas driver Kevin Magnussen ended up getting a race suspension for getting too many points on his license. So Max is officially at 6, and there's only 4 races left. He does have 2 points for, I think it was causing a collision or pushing someone off the road from Vegas of last season, but that expires in the next couple weeks. So then he'll be back down to 4 points. 100%, he should have gotten these points. I don't disagree with it whatsoever. Neither is Red Bull, neither of his fans. He just needed to, I don't know what the fuck he was thinking. He needed to be punished, and he did. I'm glad the stewards were able to actually make a stand and go, hey, you did this wrong. Here's your punishment. Just take it and move on, which, to his credit, he did. And amongst all this happening, especially on the second issue with Lando Norris, all of a sudden, Ferrari, they're still just being super consistent. They're being very quiet. They're doing what they need to do. And all of a sudden, because of the last incident where Max and Lando go so far off the track, all of a sudden, that second sneaky Ferrari, Charles Leclerc, just ends up sneaking in and passing both of them at the exact same time. Fantastic move. Great way for Leclerc to keep his head on his shoulders. He didn't panic. He just knew what he needed to do and just kept on keeping on. Unfortunately, I mean, that was kind of the race. Ferrari just pulled away lap 16 to lap 71. They were absolutely 100% in control. Back-to-back victories for Ferrari. Amazing race for them. They need the points, and we're going to cover the points at the very end of this episode. That's going to be a very interesting conversation that we're going to have. But congratulations to Ferrari. Unfortunately, lap 16 as well also meant that one person also DNF'd just because of car troubles. Fernando Alonso could not complete his 400th Grand Prix. He ended up DNFing on lap 16 due to car issues. Now, they didn't state what it actually was, and I still haven't heard what it is. It was just something to do along with the car. Lando, man, you need somewhere else to go. You need somewhere else to go besides Aston Martin. They are not the team that you thought they were. They are not the team that you hoped they were, and they are definitely not the team that you deserve. Moving on, by the time we hit lap 38, Carlos Sainz was 7.5 seconds ahead of everybody else. It was an absolutely dominant display. It was fantastic. It came all the way down to lap 63 when, unfortunately for Leclerc, and he has done this many, many times in his career, he has shot himself absolutely in the foot. It was looking like a Ferrari 1-2 all the way until the end. I tricked you. It doesn't end like a 1-2 for Ferrari. Unfortunately, an overcorrection for Charles Leclerc on a straight stretch. Coming out of a corner into a straight stretch, he overcorrects, ends up going to the very far left-hand side of the track, ends up picking a ton of dirt up, does not hit the wall, thank God, no crash, but he ends up losing second place position, through no one else's fault but his own on lap 63. Lando Norris passes him with a lot, and I mean a lot of ease. And that is essentially how this race finishes. Checo Perez started 18th, ends up finishing, I believe it's 16th or 15th, just because of all the DNFs. Absolutely no help for Red Bull whatsoever. Let's go through the top 10 right now. We're going to go through 10 up to 1. Pierre Gasly, number 10. Nico Hülkenberg, 9. Oscar Piastri, 8th. Not a horrible day for Oscar Piastri. He just definitely started on the back foot. He had some trouble getting through traffic. He did try his best, but he kept his cool. He didn't do anything stupid. He's showing McLaren that even though he doesn't have exact the greatest race, that he is still intelligent enough to not absolutely bin the car and just absolutely screw up everybody else's day. Kevin Magnussen in 7th. Max Verstappen, for all of his trials and tribulations and stupid decisions, ends up finishing 6th. George Russell in 5th. Lewis Hamilton in 9th. Russell in 5th. Hamilton in 4th. Leclerc in 3rd. Norris in 2nd. And Carlos Sainz in 1st. George Russell and Lewis Hamilton, clean team race. They were given instructions many times back and forth that you are allowed to race each other. Just keep it clean. It took Hamilton like 10 laps to pass Russell. Just kind of making the statement that he may be old, but he's not out of the race quite yet. So with all these points, with all of this trials and tribulations and penalties and people not exactly finishing where they need to, this definitely makes the Constructors series a lot interesting than it was before. But let's go into the Drivers' Championships instead. Max Verstappen is still in 1st, 362 points. Lando Norris finishing 2nd today, now is still in 2nd with 315 points. Leclerc is in 3rd with 291. Oscar Piastri is in 4th with 251. Carlos Sainz is in 5th with 240. Lewis Hamilton's in 6th with 189. George Russell's in 7th with 177. Checo Perez is still in 8th with 150 points. Alex Albon's in 9th with 62 points. And Nico Hülkenberg rounding out the top 10 with 31 points. I am very, very impressed with Haas these last couple races. They have taken their development more seriously. It kind of seems like they've slowed down. Kevin Magnussen, Nico Hülkenberg, they're driving as a team, but they're not. They've gone away from the just don't crash to each other. That's kind of where they've ended up, actually. It used to be, okay, you drive together, you succeed together, all this kind of stuff. And they've kind of drifted naturally away from that, going, if you're going to race each other, just don't fucking crash. After that, do your own thing. And it seems to be working for Haas very, very, very well. They do absolutely have a chance. They're 40 points behind Aston Martin in the Constructors' Championships now. They do have a slight chance to catch them in the next 4 races. I really, really hope they do. Haas is really proving that when they act like a team but drive separately and under the proper management, sorry, Günther Steiner, that they can actually achieve what everybody thinks they can. They're not developing themselves out of contention. They're not developing themselves out of points or out of pace. So really good job for Haas. I'm excited to see where they're going to end up for the rest of the season. Now, Constructors' Championships, this is where we're at. McLaren still have 566 points. Okay, so they are still in the lead, 4 races left. Here's where it becomes really, really interesting. With Ferrari's 1-3 at the end of the race and Verstappen only in 6th and Checo Perez being fucking useless, Ferrari has officially passed Red Bull into 2nd place. Now, not only have they passed them, they've passed them by 25 points. Now, here's the more interesting part. With 4 races left, how Ferrari's going, they're like 537 points. McLaren is 566. I mean, you do the math. This is going to be a super, super, super close race. Can Ferrari make up the 29 points they need to pass McLaren in the next 4 races? My answer, absolutely 100%. Yes, they absolutely can. Just stick to what they're doing. Stick to what they know. Keep that developmental package where it is. It seems to be working very, very well. McLaren and Red Bull, for whatever reason, they still seem to be fighting each other, and that's taking momentum away from both teams that Ferrari is starting to capitalize on. It's only 4 races, 2 sprint races left to go. There are more than enough points for Ferrari to pass McLaren and just come out of essentially nowhere the last half of the season and take the Constructors' Championships. Like I'd mentioned, Red Bull has dropped down to 512 points. Fourth is Mercedes with 366 points. Aston Martin's in fifth with 86 points. Haas is in sixth with 46 points. VCARB is in seventh with 36 points. Williams is in eighth with 17. Alpine's in ninth with 14. And good old Kicksalba, sympathy corner, back markers, useless team, whatever you want to put it. 0 points, number 10. So I've had some comments before talking about Kick. I've had some comments from people that the listeners and some friends and family that I have a tendency of what it sounds like to pick on Kick. I pick on Salba. And yes and no. So there's been seasons where I've reported that Williams have had 0 points. There's been other teams that they've had 0 points for half the season, so on and so forth. And I'm not as crucial and not so hard on them as I am on Kick Salba. And there's a very specific reason for that. With Williams, we'll use them as an example. When they had absolutely 0 points, it's not that they weren't trying. They were bringing out new upgrades and new specs, and they were trying things constantly until they found the sweet spots that they're in, and they've jumped from 10th to 8th. They're gaining some points. They're learning from their mistakes, and they're gaining the experience to get better and better. Kick Salba, on the other hand, they've just kind of said, fuck it at this point, which is why I'm so hard on them. They've gone so backwards and they don't care so much that Joe Guan Yu guaranteed is not going to get a seat in 2025 or 26. I do believe that he will leave F1, and it's not his fault. It's 100% Kick Salba's fault. Valtteri Bottas, he's trying his best. He's almost getting points. He's doing very well in qualifying. But again, his experience and what he's been able to do with that car, if he had a proper car, and yes, I mean proper car, proper development, a team who cares about this vehicle, he would be in the top 10. Hell, Joe Guan Yu would have points. He would be in the top 10 as well. But it's because this team is such a laughing stock because they don't give a shit. Kick is in to just promote their logo. Salba didn't care anyways. They just put their name on the side of the car. Like, it's embarrassing. And unfortunately, the drivers who are there are taking the brunt of it. They're the ones that are going week in and week out, just being embarrassed. They're always last. And they don't crash. They don't run into anybody. Nobody runs into them. They do what they need to do. And all they do is collect information because the team that they drive for doesn't fucking care. They know they're getting taken over in 2026. They're putting absolutely no resources and no help into these cars for these drivers and the employees. They just don't care. And at this point, if I was Kick, I would be embarrassed to be a sponsor because you're not doing anything with the car. You're being associated with a shit product. You're being associated with, not giving a damn, and you're not going to get any points. It's going to be absolutely embarrassing. But hey, when your name's out there and you've got, celebrities endorsing your product, then you know what? Who really gives a shit, right? But enough about Kick. Let's look forward to the next weekend. Triple header, last race of this triple header. We are in Brazil, November 1st to November 3rd. It is another sprint weekend. So Friday, full practice at 8:30 our time a.m. Sprint qualifying is at 12:30. Saturday, the actual sprint race is at 8 a.m. Qualifying for the Grand Prix is at 12 p.m. And race day Sunday is 10 a.m. So not too late for us. We don't have to sleep in. We can sleep in, but we don't have to get up super, super early. I'm very excited for Brazil. Brazil is another very fast track. It's going to be very interesting to see what Red Bull does in response to what Max has done, what McLaren's response is going to be to Ferrari for them just nipping at their heels now. And it's going to be very interesting to see what Ferrari does this coming up last four races. Are they going to be consistent? Are they going to start making some absolutely horrendous or interesting choices? But until next weekend, as always, everyone from here from F101 would like to thank everybody out there listening. Without you guys, we wouldn't have a podcast. So you know what? Thank you guys very, very much as we start to close out the third season of F101. And until then, keep that engine racing, keep those tires spinning. Talk to you guys next week.